All rise. Supreme Court of the State of Colorado is now in session. Chief Justice Nancy E. Rice presiding.
All right, thanks. Everyone may be seated. Our first case this morning is called concerning the application for water rights of Whitefield Water and Sanitation District and the City of Fountain in Custer County. May I have the interview appearances, please, starting with the appellant applicants?
Sarah Klon.
Stand up, please.
Sarah Klon, Department of Water and Sanitation.
Klon, K-L-A-H-N.
Yes,
and who's seated at council table with you?
City Rovell. O-E-E-L-L for the city council.
Will only you be doing the argument?
Yes.
Thank you. For the opposer appellants, please.
Morning, Your Honor. Paul Bennington. I'm the First Assistant Attorney General for the Water Resources Unit of the Attorney General's Office. I'm here today representing the state engineer.
And who's seated at council table with you?
Well, Your Honor, I'm Bob Crossa, attorney for Water Council for the Kettle Lewis with the problem this year. And for Round Mountain Water and Sanitation.
All right.
And I'm Tom Mullins, attorney for the West Country problem this year.
Who's going to be doing the speaking on your side, please?
I will be doing the wrong.
The entire argument?
Yes.
Right, thank you. Ms. Klon, you have 30 minutes, as do you. Council, Mr. Bennington. Ms. Klon, you need to keep track of your own time. You may go ahead, please.
May it please the court. My name is Sarah Klon. I'm representing the appellants Whitefield Water and Sanitation District in the City of Fountain. This case involves the question of whether an historic consumptive use analysis in a water court change case can be limited as a matter of law to irrigation uses on the originally decreed acres, despite over 50 years of use on different historical acres, pursuant to two prior Division II water court change decrees. The court might wonder why we would ask for such a ruling in light of the court's recent precedents, in which it has limited HCU analyses by reference to the amount of water necessary to irrigate the originally decreed acres rather than changed acres. The court's recent precedents all included an opportunity for the applicants to have a hearing on the merits of their historic consumptive use analyses and to resolve issues of expansion of use. The water court, in its order below in our case, however, acknowledged the disputed fact over the question of expansion and yet still ruled as a matter of law that we were limited to evaluating historical consumptive use on the original acres. By concluding reliance on the historical acres in our HCU analysis, the water court prevented us from demonstrating no expansion. As a result, we're going to ask for you to reverse and remand to the water court for a hearing on the disputes of fact and specifically whether or not there's been an expansion. The water rights and lands at issue today are located in the Wet Mountain Valley near West Cliff, Colorado, and I've provided the court with a couple of maps that I'd like to use to orient you to the disputes in the case. The first map I'd like you to take a look at is the one that's shown here on the podium. It's the one with the colored squares on it. The colored squares reflect the outer boundary of the old Bell Ranch. W.A. Bell appropriated water rights for use within the outer boundaries of the Bell Ranch, and his decree was entered in 1896. Colors reflect current ownership of portions of the land. And in the table below, you see the water rights listed by column. So there's four separate appropriations associated with the Bell Ranches. And ask you to focus on the blue rectangle. That is the land owned by the appellants Whitefield and Fountain. And in the table below, you can see that if you follow across the blue rectangle, you can see the proportional ownership that Whitefield and Fountain have in these priorities associated with the Bell Ranches. It's important to note that the blue rectangle and the water rights listed in that table below associated with Whitefield and Fountain's ownership have all been involved in two prior change cases. So the first change case was in 1976 when Conquistador attempted to build a ski area in the Wet Mountain Valley, and it purchased this land and water rights along with a few others which aren't issued here for augmentation purposes. Changed the water rights for augmentation purposes based on historical acres. 20 years later, when it was clear that there was not going to be a ski area, Mountain Cliff purchased the land and water rights and changed the water rights back to irrigation uses, again, onto the historical acres. So this suite of water rights and uses on this land have been an issue twice before. We rely on the decree interpretation of the Mountain Cliff Decree, and we went into some lengths in our briefing to describe the error of the court in interpreting the lands that the Mountain Cliff Decree ordered to be returned to irrigation. And I don't want to reiterate that altogether, but I want to go over a couple of things and respond to the state's arguments, which take an opposite position from ours. The Mountain Cliff Decree changed, it did two things. It changed the Bell rights back to irrigation uses. And it changed them back. And this, you know, before I do that, let me say two more things as preliminary. I apologize. This map shows, now we're looking at the map with the orange squares on it. This map shows the acres that were originally decreed to be irrigated associated with the Bell Ditches, okay? And I'm going to show you in a minute the pattern of use of the historical use of the water rights. But two things are undisputed. Not very much else in this case is undisputed, but two things are undisputed. One, that the historical acres differ from the original decreed acres, number one. Number two, that the colored squares map that we started out by looking at is within, includes use of the Bell Ditches within the original boundaries of the Bell Ranch. So we have a Rubik's Cube. We have a situation where the water rights have been mixed and matched. We don't have a situation where additional lands outside of the Bell Ranch have been brought in for use. And we think that's significant for reasons I'll get into.
Are we talking about only one decree, or are we talking about a large decree that was entered sometime later? I mean, are we speaking only about the 1800s decree?
The 1896 decree was the original decree, right. Justice Hobbs. And then in 1976, the Conquistador Change Decree was the next decree associated with the subset of water rights that's indicated in the blue on the map that we were looking at a minute ago. Does that answer your question?
Maybe. I'm talking about whether or not there was a decreed enlargement at any time. Apparently, the acreage was expanded. Is that correct?
The acreage was expanded on for purposes of the Bell Number 2 ditch. The acreage was not expanded in terms of the Rubik's Cube theory, mixing and matching for the Bell 1 and the Bell 3. So there was an expansion of the number of acres irrigated under the Bell 2. But the Conquistador Decree in 1976 relied on the change in place of use to more acres under the Bell 2.
And was the change in use noticed in any respect under any adjudication to other water users on the stream?
Yes, it was the subject of resume notice and publication.
In what, when?
In, I believe it was filed in 1975.
Okay.
And the change in historical acres took place at least as early as 1960. That's what the record reflects. We believe it may have occurred earlier than that, but okay. The Conquistador Court relied on the Wright Water Engineers' historic consumptive use.
The Water Court for Water Division 2 vacated the change that had the enlarged number of irrigated acres.
It vacated the change for augmentation purposes, but it incorporated portions of the Conquistador Decree into the Mountain Cliff Decree.
But what we're trying to construe the decrees, are we not?
I think we're trying to construe the Mountain Cliff Decree, yes.
But how about the original one?
Well, the original one is important because it shows what historically happened, and that's what the Mountain Cliff Decree specifically puts at issue.
I don't want to slow you down, but...
No, I understand.
As you know, the fundamental of Colorado water law is the intent to appropriate and the perfected beneficial use. Correct?
That's correct.
The intent of the original appropriator and then what was perfected. So you would agree that's the fundamental?
I agree that's fundamental, but I agree we haven't yet had a hearing on whether or not the water, as it's been used in its current pattern of use, is more water, is an expansion of use beyond that which the appropriator, William Bell, sought to appropriate in 1896.
Okay, I don't want to slow you down.
Just before you leave that, though, I'm not sure I understood that point. So you're saying that one of the appropriations, there was an expansion of use of acreage, but were you saying with regard to the total, all three that are involved here, there was no expansion? That is, was there a reduction of acres in a... Okay, so...
Yes, there was. There was a reduction of acres with regard to the Bell number 3 junior water right. And the Bell number 2, we acknowledge there is an increase in the number of acres. It was 50 acres originally, now it's 93. But I think it's important to note that this court's precedents have distinguished between the question of whether you limit historic consumptive use to the acres or to the amount of water necessary to serve the acres. And that is our point, is we haven't had a chance to have a hearing on whether the amounts of water we've been using in our chronically water short, physically limited, physical supply limited system is in fact an expansion, because we believe it is not.
Okay, thank you.
I would like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal, but I'm going to just go briefly over the issues that with the Mountain Proof decree that we believe the state engineer and the court below got wrong. The court below relied entirely on conclusion of law 1 in the Mountain Proof decree. And conclusion of law 1 is, we believe, a general statement of law. The state engineer at oral argument and in his briefing scoffs at the notion that a decree would contain a general statement of law, but in fact, as you are well aware from looking at plenty of these water appeals, water decrees often have general statements of law. For example, change decrees often say the water court may change a water right. But just because there is a general statement of law that regard in a decree, you don't ignore the terms and conditions in the remainder of the decree. It simply is a statement of the court's power to do something. The state engineer and the court below both ignored the plain language in the decree portion of the Mountain Cliff decree, which specifically requires irrigation associated with these acres. This is the third gap we have. In this pattern of use. Now there's a lot of foolish, pardon me, I shouldn't characterize it that way. There's a lot of argument about the fact that these numbers don't match, that they aren't precise, that there's a few acres difference between what the decree says and what the Appendix 1 says. And I think that's probably not well taken in light of the fact that the title of this appendix is approximate historical acres. The decree specifically calls for irrigation of these water rights in this pattern of use and specifically requires it to avoid injury to the stream system.
I have a question about that.
Yes.
I take it what you're talking about is the language at page 12 of the order, where he says the decree includes the following conclusion of law and then quotes it. Is that what you're talking about?
That is what I'm talking about.
And then the judge goes on to say that it seems pretty weird that I'm not quoting, honestly, and then basically says, but that the conclusion is consistent with the court's previous finding. Could you explain that, please?
There were
two. It seems to me that that's the essence of the court's ruling right here.
I'm sorry, could you...
It seems to me that that's the essence of what the court is finding, is that this, whatever it is consistent with the earlier ruling in 2012.
The 2012 ruling, Your Honor, was a separate... We had briefing on this issue twice in this case. The first ruling was entered in April of 2012, and Judge Mays ruled that the I'm looking at the court's order from 2012, and I'm sorry, I don't have a record site, but I'm sure it's in the record. The court finds the above ruling to be compelling. That being the case, the parties are bound by the adjudication of subject water rights in Fremont County in 1896. That's his statement. Then he goes on to say, it's therefore ordered, adjudged, and decreed. The 95 CWO 93 is controlling to the extent it has not modified terms of the 1896 subject water rights without proper notice to all interested parties. And our interpretation of that was that the 95 CWO 9, that would be the Mountain Cliff decree I was referring to, is the controlling decree for purposes of the acreage to be irrigated in historical consumption.
But Judge May says that it's consistent with his previous order. Now, you obviously disagree with that. So is that what this case is really all about, whether one decree is consistent or not? I mean, I'm having a hard time understanding your argument, frankly. If you could speak very specifically to what Judge May said in his order, I would appreciate it. And specifically the first paragraph of page 12.
This is Judge Schwartz. He took over for Judge Mays about a month before he issued this order. And
The second judge.
Sorry?
The second judge was Schwartz, the first one was Mays, right?
Correct. Yes,
speak right. To that point, please.
Judge Schwartz was getting at there was that he was not coming to a different conclusion than Judge Mays came to in April of 2012. Regarding the interpretation of the 95 CW09 or the Mountain Cliff Decree. And what's at issue in this case is the 2013 order, and to the extent it relied on the 2012 order, that's at issue as well. That the interpretation the court gave the Mountain Cliff Decree was inappropriate. There's no basis in the Mountain Cliff Decree. Courts are obviously authorized to do decree interpretation under Ready Mix in a change case. But there was no basis given the plain language of the Mountain Cliff Decree to limit our historic consumptive use to the original acres because of the plain language of the Mountain Cliff Decree. That's the plain language to me.
Okay, I think I understand where you're coming from, but the trial judge seems to disagree. On page 13, he goes on to say, no ambiguity appears to exist here. The appellants have failed to offer another reasonable interpretation. He just disagrees with your legal argument.
And this court has free reign to review the district court's interpretation as a matter of law of decrees, and that's why we're here today.
Are you abandoning your argument that this is nothing, this is not boilerplate?
Well, I believe my statement that it is a general statement of law is a more refined way to call it boilerplate.
Well, according to the judge, he says that the appellants contend in the alternative that this is boilerplate, which is why I was asking whether or not you were abandoning that alternative argument.
We believe that for all the reasons I just stated, that the conclusion of law number one is a general statement of law that, given the rules of decree interpretation that this court has stated in the past, that the decree must be interpreted as a whole, rather than by reference to individual parts, that's Dropkowitz versus Sassola, that the court below erred, whether you call it boilerplate or whether you call it something else, whatever they rejected of our argument related to that, it was improper, and we asked for this court to reverse. Essentially, Justice Rice, we believe what the court did was try to put the cart before the horse. And we don't think there's any basis in this court's precedence to assume that acreage must be restricted to determine historic consumptive use instead of using historic consumptive use to determine if acreage led to an expansion. At the end of the day, we're talking about whether or not Whitefield and Fountain get to change the amount of water that was used historically on these lands. And if we can show that amount of water used is not an expansion over what Mr. Bell originally appropriated, his intent to appropriate was, we should be entitled to do that. And unless you have another question, Justice Rice, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time.
I don't have another question. Mr. Bennington?
May it please the court, I'd like to mention that I am joined today by the deputy state engineer, Mike Sullivan, and the division engineer for water, division number two, Mr. Steve Witte. The two water judges entering rulings below, first Judge Mays in 2012, and then Judge Schwartz in 2013, properly applied this court's precedent as to express and imply limitations in decreed water rights, and should be affirmed by this court. This appeal involves three court decrees. The original 1896 decree for the subject water rights included specific legal descriptions of the number of acres irrigated by each water right in specific quarters of specific sections of Township 22 in Custer County. The 1977 decree in W4321 changed the water rights for augmentation use for the Conquistador Ski Resort, but the decree never took effect under its own terms and conditions and was subsequently vacated in the third decree in 95 CW09. Now, that 1995 CW09 decree on its face states that the W4321 decree is hereby vacated, and that the decree which previously changed the water right may be vacated so as to restore the use of water convertible under that right to the place and for the purpose for which it was originally decreed. I think that language is very clear and plain, and there's no ambiguity as to what the intent of that stipulated decree was. Neither of the two change cases, first in 77 and then in 1995, neither of them were filed for the purpose of changing the place of use of the irrigation rights. The first was to change the type of use from irrigation to augmentation use. The second was to vacate the augmentation use so that the water rights could be returned to their originally decreed purposes, irrigating their specifically decreed lands. Now, while this appeal is largely focused on the proper interpretation of that second change decree, the 95 CW09 decree, there is one key undisputed fact that should resolve this appeal. The 95 CW09 decree does not rely upon any calculation of historical consumptive use. There is no analysis of historical diversion records, crop irrigation requirements, or consumptive use. No average annual consumptive use, no requirements to maintain historical return flows, no terms and conditions to prevent injury other than returning the water rights to their original places of irrigation use. The court does not need to...
The original being the intent of the appropriator when the appropriator filed for the water right and then presumably applied the water to the acreage specified in the decree.
That's correct, Your Honor. It was an absolute, these are all absolute water rights decreed in 1896, and the acres to be irrigated were specifically described by legal description in quite a bit of detail for an 1896 decree.
Could I ask you, is that also the case with regard to the earlier, the Conquistador decree, was that the 77? Or did that actually make a calculation of historical consumptive use?
That decree did make a calculation of historical use for two of the three water rights that are before the court, with ditch number one and ditch number two. And that, as Judge Mays found in the 2012 order, that decree was vacated, and so its findings as to historically irrigated acres and historical consumptive use was vacated.
And that seems to be a dispute between the two of you, and I was just trying to narrow. So if we were to find that that was not vacated, that is, its determination of historical use was not vacated, then would that be a legitimate binding decree on the 95 ruling?
If that decree is still valid today, the 1977 decree, we believe the historical consumptive use determinations for ditch one and ditch two would be binding through the date of the decree in 1977. Then we would look at the subsequent historical use after that date to see if those numbers need to be revised in any way. But yes, it would be binding because that decree did rely on the calculation of historical use and the formation of that decree. But you look at the 95 CW09 decree, there's no calculation of historical use for any of those water rights Because they were going to be restored to their irrigation use prior to the 77 decree, and at that time they could only be used on the original decree acres.
Right, and do I understand right, that's a disputed point between you all in terms of the interpretation of the 95 decree, whether it really intended to restore use back to the original decree or not?
I think the dispute over the 95 decree is whether it affected a change in the place of use of the 1896 irrigation rights. In other words, did it approve a change to the larger historically irrigated lands, or was it just restoring them to their lawful use on the originally decreed lands? And that's the nature of the dispute on the interpretation of the 95 CW09 decree. But I think that's misleading, because under this court's case law, under Orr and Westminster v. Church, if a decree did not rely upon the calculation of historical use and formation of the decree, it has no preclusive effect on the determination of historical consumptive use in a subsequent proceeding. So today, the 95 decree has no preclusive effect, and we should be able to look at what lands were lawfully irrigated and do that full historical consumptive use determination in this case today.
And that's true. You're saying even if the 95 decree properly construed meant to extend or accept the historical use of the 97, because you're saying basically that never has a preclusive effect except up to that point.
Yes, if our interpretation of the 95 CW09 decree is correct, the water rights remained expressly limited to the originally decreed lands.
Right.
If their interpretation is correct, and they could irrigate all of, you know, the historically irrigated lands, under your case law precedent, they are still implicitly limited to the amount of water necessary to irrigate the originally decreed lands, because that decree did not rely upon any calculation of historical use in the formation of that decree. And so really, what the meaning of the 95 CW09 decree, even though the briefs focus on that quite a bit, and the water judges did as well, is really irrelevant to your case law about express and implied limitations. So,
and that would be true, just one follow-up, because do I understand your opponents is arguing that even if the 95 decree did not make a separate calculation, it relied on a decree that did make a separate calculation.
It vacated a decree that made a separate
calculation. And that's a separate argument, right?
Yeah, and we don't think either the appellants or the amici have, you know, really made any legal arguments on the effect of vacatur. You know, the Judge Mays, did the first initial legal ruling that the effect of the water court vacating its decree was to vacate any preclusive effect of that decree. And so we don't see that the 95 decree propagated any of the findings of that decree, either as to historically irrigated acreage or as to any calculation of historical consumptive use. And the appellants are basically asking you that very plain statement in the first conclusion of law about what was happening here. They want you to ignore that and come to a conclusion that's in contrary to all your case law precedent. It's really, in our minds, an extraordinary request. And I would point out, and you'll see this in our statement of the facts, there is a marginal use claim for Ditch 1. It was decreed for 140 acres on the ranch. They're claiming it was used to irrigate 360 acres. Ditch 2, 50 acres, originally decreed in 1896. 352 acres is what they claim it was historically used upon, in concert with other rights. Ditch 3, 160 acres on the ranch. They're claiming 250 acres were historically irrigated. We wouldn't be here today if they were only claiming the amount of water necessary to irrigate the originally decreed lands. We're here today because they're claiming the irrigation of the originally decreed lands and the irrigation of the enlarged lands. We set out in our statement of facts that based on their proposed decree, for the 350 acres that were decreed in 1896, based on their numbers of crop irrigation requirements of 1.65 acre feet per acre, if they had a full supply and satisfied a full irrigation requirement, for 350 acres, they would get 577.5 acre-feet of consumptive use. Their proposed decree on its face claims 778 acre-feet of consumptive use based on 453.4 acres of irrigation. We don't think there's any dispute that they're claiming on the face of the proposed decree an enlargement, an expansion of historic consumptive use.
And even regardless of what we do, there's going to be an evidentiary hearing on consumptive use, right?
That's correct.
And this is a change case we're looking at.
Yes, that's correct.
Right. And so the decree in the 1890s speaks for itself, doesn't it? I mean, determining what that consumptive use analysis ought to entail.
Yes, and I think you have to look at the originally decreed lands, Your Honor, because some of those lands, especially under ditch number one, are sub-irrigated. That's one of the claims of our clients. And so all that will be adjudicated. But you need to look at the originally decreed lands because they have certain characteristics that would dictate how much water was needed irrigated under ditch one, given the fact that it was sub-irrigated. So you look at those originally decreed lands to determine what were the needs of that land, what's the amount of water necessary to irrigate the originally decreed lands. That's the maximum, is the maximum, you know, what was the water that was necessary to irrigate these lands given the water supply that was available. Beyond that, there's, on your case law, they are further strictly limited to the amount of actual historical use on the originally decreed lands. So that full crop irrigation requirement, that 577 I mentioned, that's the most, but then they have to demonstrate what did they actually apply to those originally decreed lands and what was their consumptive use from that. And that's their.
So we don't have that problem that comes up in other decrees where the land is not specified in the original decree, the land to be irrigated, and you kind of have to put together the intent with what occurred and then when it occurred and see whether an enlargement endangering other water rights occurred in the meantime without an additional decree in priority for the enlarged amount.
That's correct, Your Honor. As you recall in the Jones Ditch case, you had a decree that was silent as to the place of use, and you affirmed the Water Court's determination that at the time of the original appropriation in 1882, the farmer only contemplated irrigating 344 acres, and even though the ditch had been expanded to irrigate over 700 and some acres, you reduced them to just looking at the amount of water necessary to irrigate the 344 acres, and found that that enlarged irrigation use was unlawful and could not be included in the calculation of historical consumptive use. And we think that applies directly to this case, Your Honor. Also, in Santa Fe Trail Ranches, you found that any undecreed use cannot be included in the calculation of historical consumptive use. We think both those cases are directly applicable here, and they should be limited to the amount of water necessary to irrigate and actually used to irrigate the originally decreed lands.
And so is that proposition that you've just made about you could never change more, I guess, never have more than the amount you actually used with regard to the decreed acreage? Is that without regard to this side argument about whether you could change acreage before 1969 without a decree?
I think that's, and I'd like to address that pre-1969 argument, but that's correct, Your Honor. You cannot, in a change of water right case, expand beyond what was historically used for the decreed beneficial use at the appropriator's decreed place of use. That's the maximum you're entitled to here. And the Arkansas River, as you know, is an over-appropriated basin. So any expansion of the historical consumptive use over what occurred on those originally decreed lands will be injurious to junior water right holders. Now, in Colorado, as the case law establishes, irrigation appropriations are made for specific land. Here, unlike the Jones Ditch case, we have very detailed descriptions of the amount of acres to be irrigated in each quarter section of Township 22. The decreed irrigation right cannot be lawfully enlarged beyond the amount of water necessary to irrigate the lands for which the appropriation was made.
And that's because the appropriator's intent is very important as to the mark put on the amount of the public's water resource that's going to be in effect reduced to consumptive use. And so we need to look at that intent of that appropriator, and then the evidence in the decree itself that spoke about specific lands. So if you wanted to irrigate additional lands, even if, you know, they adjoined your ranch, you would then file for a new appropriation. That's how it works, right?
Yes, the expanded use that we know began probably is in 1960. That's the earliest date we know of. That wasn't the original appropriator doing that. And so, yes, they would have been basically making a new appropriation for a new place of use, and should have come in promptly and filed for a water right card for that new use, or come in and said, you know, made a claim to change their existing right to allow this new place of use. And we think prior to the 1969 Act, those were the same standards, that you could not change your place of use or your type of use without court approval, because you've had a decree priority. The court has, you've come to the court and said, here, the lands are being irrigated. The court doesn't grant you that right, they just confirm, okay, you've proven that you have an absolute right to irrigate these specific lands. I'm approving your right. You now have a decree priority. If you want to do something different under that decree priority, you need to come back in.
And change the decree with notice so other people can either make their claim that it's injurious or not to their junior right. I assume we're talking about the order of juniors that are entitled to maintenance of the stream condition that the original appropriator can take according to that, but then the new appropriators get to take the maintenance of the stream condition as they find it.
That's exactly our position, Your Honor, and we think it's correct as a matter of law. They, you know, the more the amici than the appellants argue that prior to 1969, you only had to come in if you're going to change your point of diversion. You didn't have to come in if you're going to change your type or place of use. You have to keep in mind, obviously, the history of Colorado in those early days before our rivers. Systems got seriously overcrowded. Most of the changes at that time were just irrigators changing the point of diversion to make it easier to irrigate the lands they intended to irrigate. We didn't have a lot of changes in types or place of use going on. People were just making new appropriations. But the Colorado Constitution sets forth the right to appropriate for specific beneficial uses. In the Constitution, it considers domestic, irrigation, manufacturing, mining purposes, and recognizes that these are going to be different types of rights with different types of beneficial uses. The adjudication statutes, the purpose of the adjudication statutes was to eliminate the uncertainty and chaos about, well, what is your water right? What can you use it for? It was established to get everybody to come into court, have the court confirm what you're using your water right for and where and how much, so that the water commissioners knew how to administer the water rights. We'd eliminate the uncertainties and fights over what you're doing with your water right upstream that's adversely affecting you downstream. So this argument that prior to 69, you didn't have to come in if you were going to change your type or place of use, we think is inconsistent with all of your case law. There's no support in the law for such a notion. We think it's an attempt to do an end run around your holding in Santa Fe Trails Ranches, that any undecreed use cannot be included in the historical consumptive use determination. People are upset about that because there are water users out there that did make new appropriations, did change the type and place of use, and didn't timely come in. They don't want to get dinged for all of that basically non-use of their water right, and it's undecreed use that they were engaging in when they come in for their and run the risk of requantification. We think it's a way of trying to avoid that risk of requantification when they come in to change their water rights and they've got all this undecreed use going on. They want to eliminate or limit that risk by having you bless and grandfather in undecreed changes in places of type, in places of use and type of use that occurred prior to 1969, and this court should not do that. It's just inconsistent with the prior appropriation system. We think it seeks to rescue those appropriators that did not properly to seek time of adjudication of either the new appropriations or changes under their existing priorities. You know, the state engineer's office estimates that of approximately 160,000 decreed water rights that are on the books today, probably about 40,000 of those were decreed prior to 1969. And we think the arguments of the appellants and some amici would cause the very type of uncertainty and chaos Colorado's adjudication statutes were intended to avoid for those 40,000 plus or minus water rights decreed prior to 69. We think this would also eliminate the important constitutional and statutory protections for junior appropriators that is built into the adjudication system. In Jones Ditch case, this court rejected that argument that prior to 69, back in 1882, when the Jones Ditch water rate was appropriated, that the law was somehow different. In that case, and we cite this in our briefs, the Central Colorado Water Conservancy District argued that in 1882, when the Jones Ditch water rate was decreed, Colorado law did not limit lawful historical use to the acreage irrigated when the decree was entered. This court rejected that argument in the Jones Ditch case and should reject it again here. Both the Constitution's prior appropriation system, which is based on the first in time, first in right, and the adjudication statutes preclude a water user from making a new appropriation for a new type or place of use and requesting administration under a previously decreed senior priority without the court's approval to operate under that senior priority. In 1954, long before the 1969 Act, this court held in Farmers Highland Canal v. Golden that an appropriator may transfer a water right to another use, but the change in manner of use must be accomplished both by proper court decree, unquote. More recently, in the Bebar Ranch case, this court ruled that a 1946 appropriation could not be used to irrigate lands acquired by the ranch in 1966. Again, all that occurring prior to the 69 Act. This court held that, quote, the scope of the 1946 right and the lands upon which it may be exercised are defined by the beneficial use for which the water was appropriated, end quote. If this holding applies to Bebar Ranch's pre-1969 water right, then it applies to other pre-1969 water rights, especially including those decreed to irrigate specific acreage within specifically decreed parcels of land. Now, Your Honors, I want to return to that important notion that a prior change decree only has a conclusive effect as to historical consumptive use if historical consumptive use was calculated and relied upon the formation of the decree. Here, again, the first change decree in 1977 never took effect and was vacated. Even that decree only included the calculation of historical consumptive use for two of the three water rights now before the court. The second change decree in 95 CW09 did not rely upon or decree any calculation of historical consumptive use and has no preclusive effect on the determination of historical consumptive use or what lands were lawfully irrigated and should form the basis of that historical consumptive use analysis.
Could I just follow up on that one second, going back to this point we talked about? So if we were to disagree that the 77 decree was completely vacated, including its calculation of historical use up to that point, would we be in the position, would it then be the case that the 77 decree, regardless of no further calculation in 95, would at least be preclusive with regard to the historical use up to that point?
Only up until, as this court has said, up to the date of the decree. And in Midway Ranch's case, you basically held to that effect that previous adjudication of historical consumptive use is preclusive as to that historical consumptive use up to the date of the decree. Because really, that's the only history you've looked at. You've only looked at the history prior to that decree. You haven't looked at what's happening subsequently. And your other cases headed to the court about looking at that subsequent use and factoring that in. The state takes a position that you would look at the subsequent historical use and average that in with what you had already determined prior to the entry of.
Partly what I'm questioning there is, assuming you're right with regard to what the law was before 69, and therefore maybe the 1977 decree was wrong in finding historical consumptive use on a changed acreage. But nevertheless, unless it was vacated completely in the 95 decree, does it have preclusive effect, even though maybe it was wrong?
Yes, the court had jurisdiction in that case to make a historical use determination. It had jurisdiction to make a mistake in calculating it. And absent a reopening of that decree, if they want to stay under that decree and continue to operate, that mistake can't be corrected. You know, until you, even if you came in and filed a change with the 95 case, you came in and filed a change at that time, you would not redetermine that historical consumptive use. That was amenable to determination in the trial in the 77 case and was determined, and that's raised judicata through the date of the decree. You wouldn't revisit that. But after that decree, you could say, well, look, we're now going to look at the historical use after that decree. For the purposes of doing that, we should really just look at the originally decreed lands and then average that in with the mistaken calculation from before.
Why? What I don't, what I don't understand is why you would average that in.
That's correct.
I don't understand that. Why would you average it?
Typically, we
go from point A to point B, set point. Point B to C, another set point. Why would you average A to C?
Typically, when you look at the statutory scheme, you look at the water court decrees, changes in water rights are usually determined based on their average annual consumptive use. So you usually would, in most of these change decrees, it's been the practice to look at the patterns over time and come up with an average historical consumptive use. Sometimes you establish maximum annual use, or maximum monthly use, and sometimes you have long-term averages. But typically, you know, water rights are used to property nature, and their use continues to fluctuate over the whole life of the right. So you look at the whole life of the right and average its use over time. You can provide flexibility by having maximum annuals and monthly annuals and long-term averages, so people can achieve their long-term averages. But that is how you protect the junior appropriators the life of the right.
Then maybe I'm a little bit confused. And at the conclusion of your brief, you are asking us to run, let me just find the language so that I don't misstate it. You're asking us to run the historical consumptive use determination back to 1896, right?
Correct. You would look at all years.
So all years, or would you look to what happened in 1896?
No.
Maybe we're just having trouble with vocabulary here.
I think so, Your Honor. What you look at in 1896 was what was the extent of use contemplated at the time of the appropriation.
Exactly.
That could be much greater than what actually occurred historically.
Right.
So you start there, and that kind of sets the max. You know, the irrigation of these originally decreed lands, that's the most that was contemplated. And then you're strictly limited to what you actually did do in the irrigation of those lands. So if you look at the Farmers Highline Canal case v. Golden, you set that up. You say you need a proper decree.
I know that case.
You're limited to what was contemplated at the time of the appropriation, but you're strictly further limited to the actual historical use at the appropriator's place.
I understand that. So your answer to Justice Coates, I guess you had a hypothetical in there. Maybe that's what confused me. You don't agree with his hypothetical, is that correct?
Well, we believe that.
About the 77?
No, we do agree with his hypothetical that if the 77 decree is still in effect, you know, was never vacated, it would still have preclusive effect through 77. But on the face of the 95 decree, it says that January 77 decree is hereby vacated. We think it's null and void, we think Judge Mays is correct, that it's finally tested historic consumptive use and historic irrigation.
And again, that's because of conditions in that 77 decree that never matured. It never became effective.
That's correct, correct. It was never put to augmentation use.
And so, thank you, go ahead.
I'm sorry, and so as a practical matter, under your view, if the 95 decree did vacate the earlier decree, the historical consumptive use calculation would simply start at 1896 and go forward and not take into account the calculations in the 77 decree?
That's correct. In fact, those calculations are much lower than what the appellants are claiming. That decree only had 315 acre feet of consumptive use under the two water rights it quantified. They're claiming over 770 acre feet, so it's quite an enlargement even over what was in that decree. But yes, she was over from 1896 through the date of the application in this case. The 95 decree is the only valid decree that is out there, and it didn't include any calculation of historical use, so you would look at that whole period, and usually you take.
Your time is up.
Oh, thank you very much, Your Honor.
Some time remaining for you, Ms. Klein. Looks like about 12 and a half minutes.
Thank you. So why isn't this Jones Ditch? That's what the state has argued. That's what the state just argued to you. It's not Jones Ditch for a couple of reasons. First of all, Jones Ditch was a waterlogged system, something like 3,400 acre feet of diversions on average to serve 500 acres of land. And in those kinds of waterlogged systems, the reality is that water gets put on 500 acres or whatever the acres were that Mr. Jones was entitled to use. There's a lot of return flow. And it encourages the appropriator, or encouraged the appropriator back in the day, to spread that water on more lands because he could actually grow more crops. We're in a water short system. And this court found that to be true because we're dealing with the Bell 1 water right, which was already considered by this court in Locustee v. Brandenburg. And in that case, the court noted that the system of ditches associated with Alvarado Creek and Venable Creek, the one right next to it, are water short, they're physically limited. So we don't have a situation where we've added acres. Let me disabuse you of that right now. Mr. Bennington came to this case late, and I'm sure he doesn't know the facts as well as he might. The reality is that the assertions he's making about how much we are, quote, claiming for water use on, under various ditches are simply incorrect. The engineering report, which hasn't had a hearing yet before the water judge, has in it the assertion that the Bell 2 water right was used on 93 acres. Not 350 or 540 or whatever crazy numbers one can get by looking at that 1977 Conquistador Decree and reading paragraph 15 broadly. Paragraph 15 of the Conquistador Decree, as you probably know, says the historic use of the Bell 2 water right was 102 acres, and our guys went out and did it with the latest and greatest stuff and discovered it was actually only 93. But if there was extra water left over, it got spread into the middle parcel there. And if there was extra water left over in a very wet year, it got spread to the far right parcel. That's why the court described it as variably irrigated. And we have not claimed that the Bell 2 was used on 350 acres. It simply isn't true. So that's point number one. We're in a water short system. If in fact the water has been spread onto 93 acres, we need a hearing to determine that that was inconsistent with the intent of Mr. Bell when he asked for appropriation of 50 acres. My guess, well, I don't know what's going to happen with that.
Well, I'm not getting this because you still have a chance to make your evidentiary showing of what was done under the 1890s decree, right?
I'm sorry, I'm...
You get your showing, your evidentiary showing, when it goes back anyway. This is just a question of law here. You get your showing of what happened under the original decree, right?
That's right, Justice Hobbs, and I think that's my point about the difference in facts between Jones Ditch and our case.
Well, these facts aren't in the record in front of us.
I understand, but I also feel the need to correct the record when it's stated incorrectly.
Well, just answer that question. Don't
yes,
you get a chance to show how the original decree was actually utilized according to its terms?
Yes. Yes, and that's how you deal with the whole pre-1969 Act thing. There's not parade of horribles associated with deciding that pre-1969 Act changes in places of use is somehow going to lead to a rush to the courthouse for 40,000 water users to claim that they're grandfathered in and nobody gets to look at whether that use is somehow injurious. That's the point.
But that decree was vacated in 1977. You're back in the position of a requantification of a water right that you want to change, right? So you got to look at the original decree and what the practice was on that identified land in the decree.
The 1977 decree was vacated, but terms from the 1977 decree, specifically the irrigated acres from the 1977 decree, were specifically included as a term and condition of the change back to irrigation uses.
Well, vacate means vacate. It's of no effect. It's null and void.
I don't think that's...
Well, that's the issue of law that's before us, isn't it?
Well, it's one of the issues of law before you. I agree with that. The vacated, I think, has to be read. It's not an objective term. It has to be read in the context of what the parties were seeking. And what the parties were seeking is clear from the application. They asked for a vacation and a change. If the court wanted to vacate the W4321 decree, the Conquistador decree, it could have entered a one-sentence order. And then we wouldn't be here at all, because the original acres, I think, would clearly be the acres that were authorized to be irrigated under that circumstance. But this was a change decree, and it has all the indicia of a change decree. It has terms and conditions. It has a retained jurisdiction provision. It orders irrigation of certain lands to avoid injury to the stream system. So this, it's true the Conquistador decree was vacated, but essential elements of it were incorporated into the Mountain Cliff decree. And that's where we're here. Because we would like to do our analysis based on those historical acres, understanding that if there's an enlargement question, we're going to need to demonstrate that irrigating those historical acres did not enlarge the amount of water originally intended to be appropriated by Mr. Bell. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Could I follow up on that? Just do you disagree with the engineer's position that even apart from the decree and the 69 argument, that nevertheless the amount of water that you could ever have that could be changed is limited to the amount that was actually historically applied to the decreed acreage, and was in 77. If you're arguing for the preclusive effect of that up to that point, did whoever did that at that point slide one by the court? Or do you think it was actually established that this was the historical use under the original decreed acreage?
Could you state the first part of that question? And that's exactly what I'm interested in. I want to make sure you're asking the same.
Well, I'm not sure which part, but I guess where I'm trying to go on that is, do we have reason to believe that the amount that was decreed in 77 and you argue was never vacated, that that it was actually established in that court that was the historical use on the decreed acreage?
I think it's clear from the 77 decree that it was the historical use on the historical acres. The court doesn't pull any punches on that. Paragraph 15 of the Conquistador decree describes acres in excess of what were described in the 1896 adjudication. And that's what Wright Water Engineers did their consumptive use analysis on, and that's what the court adopted.
And so is that tantamount to arguing that despite the fact that the decree is further limited by the historical usage, that nevertheless you could in effect have a change to different acreage that used more than was ever historically used, and wouldn't that be in effect greater than the decree?
I believe that has happened, and I believe it does happen, and I'm not even sure it's a problem, because the point of resume notice is for people to come in and say, wait a minute, what do you mean? This is what you want, this is the change that you want to make, and these are the acres you're claiming to have irrigated? That's not okay, it's injuring me. And that was the setup prior to 1969, and it's the setup today as far as avoiding injury from changes.
I think we have said before that although we usually only say a change can't injure senior rights, but nevertheless inherent in the notion of change is it also cannot be more than the appropriation, or otherwise it's a new appropriation, isn't it?
I I think that that, I'll say I think that may have become clearer in recent years. In the past, I believe it was understood that non-injury was the standard for a change case.
Okay.
Well, let's go right to there, because this is a property use rights system. And the intent of the appropriator in this plan description is the decreed appropriation. And the maturation on that land is the block of water that's the consumptive use water that belongs to that priority. Those are foundational principles of what a use right is, isn't that right?
That's right. Yes.
So if you want to enlarge, then you have to have a new appropriation.
Well, first we have to figure out if we've enlarged. And we don't know that yet. I realize there is case law from the Colorado Supreme Court that additional acres creates a presumption.
The system allows a change of water rights, right? Mm-hmm. So you can use the original matured use of the water resource for its consumptive use in a different situation.
Correct.
Different acreage, different point, whatever.
Correct.
But are you really arguing seriously for a use law change now that the decree, the original decree that is specific on its face, somehow doesn't describe the acreage that we're talking about, that the use right matured at? I'm not getting it, because I think this is a fundamental revolution of a century-old view of what a water use right is of the public's water resource. So
well, I think
let's be cautious here.
I don't think we're being incautious. I think we're dealing with the facts on the ground. And the facts on the ground
is that the water was apparently applied to acreage not described in the decree, which was the intent of the appropriator.
That's correct.
So if you want to change, apply it somewhere else, you get a new decree. How can we have a system that allows intervening juniors to rely on that decreed, not have the benefit of having to go back in the system and get in line again?
With all due respect, the intervening juniors were subject to this stream regimen since at least 1960 and probably before, and have had two opportunities, three now, to come to court and complain.
In other words, they got shorted.
Sorry?
But they got shorted by a time of usage that was illegal. And now in a change proceeding, they're trying to rectify it to what the original priority was. Isn't that what the original Pueblo West in the 1983 or so on basically said? When you put the water right up for examination, then you can look, it's fair to look at what the intent of the appropriator was.
That's correct, but it relates to the amount of water. It doesn't relate necessarily to the amount of acres. If the amount of water that we've currently used or historically used on the historical acres is consistent with the amount of water that could serve the original acres, there is no enlargement of the water right. So this is the fundamental problem we have with the water court's order and the state's position, that there's this effort to try and shortcut and avoid hearing. Because you know what? If the rule is the way you're suggesting, Justice Hobbs, all states ever going to have to do is look at the original decree and look at whatever the historical acres are and say, oh, well, look, there's an expansion. And that has not been the basis of this court's decision. The constitutional right is to appropriate water, not to appropriate land. It's to appropriate water for use. And what we're asking for the ability to do is to put on a case about whether the way that water's been historically used is in fact an enlargement over that original appropriation. So we understand there's a presumption related to the acres, and we acknowledge that. But we still believe, given the water short system, the shortage in physical supply, the layout of the ranch, that there are mitigating factors that are going to show that there is many enlargement. And it looks like a lot of time. So
yes, you are. Thank you.
And I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, we appreciate both counsel's argument. Mr. Kwan, thank you very much. And Mr. Bennington, thank you, sir. This case will stand submitted. We'll go on to our next case. In our next case, we'll give you a little time to get in and out of the courtroom.